Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, BronxPinstripes.com proudly brings to you the most exciting Yankees podcast in the world, George's Box.
Welcome back to George's Box. I'm JJ.
I'm Nick.
And it's a good day to be a Yankee fan. I mean, it's been good days to be a Yankee fan.
Every day recently, we've been on a roll. It's a great week, great month, great year to be a Yankee fan.
And you know what it is like? Last week, I was mad because the other stuff was impacting the Yankees. And I worry about my guys. And I don't like the – I think what they're doing is good – especially the players are really showing, for as much as there was like back and forth about the owners and players, like, who actually wants this? The players would have every right to just be like, no, we're not doing this. Like, I don't know where I'm playing, what time, who I'm playing. But they're being flexible about it. I think the Yankees have been thrust into the middle of being the most flexible. And they're just whipping ass.
No, absolutely. And when you think about it, it seems like the Yankees and the Phillies have been the ones that have been super flexible. The Phillies have had more rescheduled games with the Yankees than they've actually had games played. Andrew actually tweeted that. Yeah. I saw that. So they've really been doing it. But yeah, I mean, the last time we talked, we were 2-1. It was Tuesday night. We were about to play the Orioles. And since then, 6-0. Wednesday night, Cole dominated against Baltimore. I kind of thought that they should have taken him out after six innings. He allowed one run over six innings. Boone left him in for the seventh. He let up two more runs, which kind of impacted his line and his stats, not necessarily the game. But did you think they should have taken him out after six, or were you fine leaving him in for the seventh?
So there's part of me that just always is like, just let him go out there and fucking do it, you know? And we paid him this money. I'm fine with them leaving him in because I'm skeptical about how much season there's going to be. So like, do these pitches even matter? But for a long time, I've wanted someone that when the manager goes to come out of the dugout, you know, there's that Mussina gif where Torrey's coming out and he's like, no. I don't want a guy who's going to do that every time, which I don't think Cole, he's got a level head. But let's make him happy early. If he's fine with going back out there, let him go back out there. We've got a lot of contract ahead. Let's not start getting into like a pissing match about the seventh inning with a superstar season one of maybe a season.
You're right. Selfishly, though, I want him to win the Cy Young. And I was like, damn, that really impacted his ERA because 6 2/3 and 3 earned runs looks a lot worse at the end than 6 innings, 1 run. So I was a little bit pissed off just about that. And I really want to see him win the award because I thought he should have won it last year. But, you know, Wednesday was a very simple 9-3 Yankees Orioles, typical win. DJ with the leadoff homer. Everybody played great, but Thursday, man, you had the rain delay. We were up. We were all ready to go to bed. Like, they're going to call it, kind of like what happened opening night. And then all of a sudden at 11 o'clock, they resume.
Once it starts raining, I'm just like, oh, well, this is over. Like, every game, I just assume because I think they want to pull the ripcord. I'll be honest. I went to bed. Like, we're recording this on Tuesday. I went to bed on Monday. I was asleep at 10 o'clock. We restarted at 10:10. I didn't even know. I had no idea. They restarted. I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, they restarted the game.
Luckily, last night you didn't miss anything.
Yeah.
But if you would have went to bed last Thursday, you would have missed a lot because Loaisiga blows the lead. And then you're sitting there and it's like, all right, there's a big difference between 2-0 sweep in Baltimore or a 1-1 split. Because a 1-1 split feels like an absolute failure in an Orioles two-game series.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Baltimore, and we've traditionally, I would say for the last like decade or so, I don't have the numbers in front of me, have had a hard time winning series in Baltimore. It's a place that we've struggled. And there was even that feeling last year at the beginning of the season. Clint hit that like eighth inning home run.
We were both there.
First Saturday. Yeah, we were both there and didn't know each other. And it felt like there, you know, and that really kicked off. Like, I'm not saying that exact moment turned the way the Yankees play in Camden Yards, but like that was the beginning of like establishing dominance over them that has turned into, you know, 18 straight wins. That now you go down to Camden Yards, there's no one on this team. You have to go down there and win two games, especially when you're trying to establish like, what is our season? What team are we? Let's go out there and put our foot on their throat.
Definitely. And with a two-game series is different. Look, if it's a three-game series and they win the first two and they lose the last one, okay. Or if they take three out of four, fine. But you cannot split a two-game series, and they're down in the ninth inning. Judge is on. Your judge is up. Two runners are on. And the pitcher threw a 2-1 pitch that was below his knee, which 99% of the time, that's strike two.
Yeah.
And they call it a ball. It's 3-1, and then they give him a pitch he can hit, and you saw what happened.
He's so locked in, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that more. But at those moments where it's just like, I don't know, the baseball gods, like they're starting to give him that pitch. And I don't think there was any big like umpiring discussion around, you know, hey, this is how we got to, you know, get some of the superstars in the game, especially with everything else going on in the world right now. But I'm big into the baseball gods. And the baseball gods have decided that's a ball this year. We've seen him take it a couple of times, not chase it, not go over. Because once that starts becoming a strike, and that's not a pitch he can do a lot with, that's when he starts to hit those weak ground balls, or he swings over the top of it, and then, you know, or swings over the top of it, and that's when we start to see, like, obliques and things like that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that at-bat just personified that whole sequence. And it seems like for the past 3-4 years, however long he's been in the league, like that is called a strike 99% of the time. I was shocked.
Because it's a strike for 99% of the league. Like at that, hey, you know,
right?
He's got an extra 2 inches of shin.
Dude, his legs, especially since he wears the high socks.
Yeah.
It's so noticeable. So you said the baseball gods, but do you think umpires have just kind of figured it out and watched video, and that it just took it shouldn't take 3 years to figure that out? That's my thing.
I mean, I want to say like, I don't think the umpires are good enough to figure that out and sort that out for that one player, because we've seen some bad calls already this year. In games. And then, you know, there was some complaining on, was it last night or it might have been Sunday, where there were balls out of strike zone being called strikes, but they've been a strike all night. And if it's going to be, if you're giving that, you know, the inside part of the plate to righties all night, like, I'm totally fine with it. It's the idea that, you know, if it's outside the strike zone, we're going to make this big correction for this one guy. I don't give the umpires enough credit. Yeah, I'm not going to give them enough credit to say that they tried to get better, because I think in general they stink. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if it carries over, if they start to realize, because it's not just us talking about that. I feel like you hear about it on, you know, the major, you know, SportsCenter and MLB Tonight and whatever they play on the MLB Network, that they break down those at-bats, you know, when all it is just we're showing the same highlights again and again. They'll break down that at-bat and show he stayed off this pitch that doesn't normally get it. So I like that. Let's create a little buzz that the umpires are going to see back in their hotel room and know we can't call that.
Draw some attention to it. And it's not just Judge. The Yankees are tall across the board. Stanton, obviously. DJ is a 6'5 second baseman. Gary's a 6'3 catcher. I mean, they pretty much have the tallest player at each position.
We'd be great at basketball. You know, drop us in the bubble. If the season doesn't work out, we could beat the Nets.
Be the 8 seed.
Do you? And so here's the thing with Judge and like with that pitch is I think that what happens is he's, you know, he's getting that call right now. And that helps him lock in. You know, the idea of with no strikes, you're looking at the size of a baseball of where you want your pitch. Gets a little bigger. He's able to narrow that now. And as he establishes that over time, because there's a point in a superstar's career, it where the umpire establishes a strike zone, and then it shifts to the player establishes their strike zone. You start to get those superstar calls. So as long as he continues to not go after that pitch and then brutalize that next pitch, and they start to not call it, and then they'll keep not calling it, and then it becomes you're getting the Jordan calls. You're not getting that called on you. I remember, I forget who it was. I know Ted Williams was batting. I don't remember who the other people are. But there was a pitch that he didn't swing at one time. And the catcher says something to the umpire and goes, where was that? And he goes, if it's a strike, Mr. Williams will swing at it.
I have heard that story.
You know? And, like, I don't think Aaron Judge is going to be Ted Williams. But you start to get to that superstar level where they're like, all right, he knows because he's not a young kid anymore. Was a young kid, he comes up, he's swinging. He doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Now the umpires start to say, you know, and that's where the, like, hey, how are you, sir? Like, all the polite shit that he does comes back and helps.
Yeah, that helps. And look, the offense looked great. Jay Happ did not. They staked him to a 5-0 lead, and he lets up 4 runs in, what, two and a third, 3 innings. I'm too depressed to look at his line. To me, he looks cooked, done, washed. I think he's 38 with nothing left. Some people still kind of believe in him. I don't want to give him very many more starts.
It's weird because it's like, what do we have a rotation? Like, what is this COVID rotation where it's like, you know, are we going to play our next series? Like, do we get an extra random day off here or there? You know, I mean, Cole started with 3 of the first 9 games, 3 of the first 10 games. You don't get that really. Yeah, he looked awful. You know, he just, I had tweeted because we had the big lead. And I was like, oh, I can move the game to a second screen, whether it's my phone, an iPad.
To watch something that Emily wants to watch.
Yeah, she wants to watch Last Chance U. Yep. And I even tweeted, I was like, just when you thought you were going to watch from Last Chance U, Jay Happ.
Brutal. And people are like, oh, you know, he's going to watch video. He's going to make adjustments. To me, he has a 91-mile-an-hour fastball with very little movement that's very easy to square up. He's a fly ball pitcher with the juice ball. Like, to me, it just doesn't add up. I don't see it ending well no matter what adjustments he makes. And he just doesn't fit in on this team, man. He sucks. He really does.
So I think due to pass, we can only afford to have – at this point in the season, Paxton or Happ out of the rotation. Like, I'm not ready to give away those rotation spots fully to the young guys yet because we don't even know. Like, we don't know how long we're playing. We don't know what we're playing for. You know, who knows what other weird stuff could happen. Like, I haven't ruled out, and I don't know if the league's even allowed to do this, like them hitting a point where they're like, you know what, we're only doing a 50-game season. We'll pay you for the other 10 games. Let's just get to the playoffs or something like that. Like, we don't – this season's evolving so much that having the veteran presence of a guy who's – you know, if I have to pick between the two, I'm taking Happ because Happ's just gotten kicked in the teeth more times and still showed up, where I think really sucking is new to Paxton. And I just don't think
Paxton
we can give away
90.
2 spots yet.
We'll talk about this. Paxton at 90 to 91 is just – he's non-competitive.
He is an amazing high school pitcher, dropped into a major league. Because it's – I mean, we saw guys in high school who could throw 91, throw 92, and they're the best. But they don't get drafted and go straight to the big leagues because it doesn't move. And that's what Paxton has right now. He just can't move.
And it's alarming because so last year I went to, I believe it was his first home start against the Red Sox. He threw 8 shutout. It was on a Tuesday night. We dominated Boston. It was in April. And he was touching 99, like high 99s. I mean, this is supposed to be a high velo flamethrower. And he was averaging 91.4 or something where it's like, it's not even close.
Yeah. And they were saying, like, I think last year he had the highest average velo of a left-handed starter.
Yes. It was like 96 and change.
I think it was like 95.4, something like that.
Yeah.
Or whatever the difference was. Like, for the Red Sox, they hit like 368 when you're over 95. If you're under 95, if you're over 95, they hit like 160. And just like when they show that and then they show Paxton throw his next pitch, I was like, oh, well, we're looking at the 368.
This is the bad part of it. And when you look at his two starts, you know, on Sunday night, he was lucky enough that he only went three innings and he pitched like shit, but the Yankees scored 10 runs and bailed him out. But in the one game that we lost against DC or against the Nationals, the offense wasn't able to bail him out. So he can't be pumping out these three inning starts and just expect the offense to put up a 10 spot to bail him out every time. It's not going to happen every time.
No, I mean, we have my whole thing for years with this team when it was like 2017, 2016 was we have a 5-6 run offense. So you don't even have to be a great pitcher to do that. But that's before the balls are juiced. So like now we have no idea what is happening. I mean, Gardner's going oppo. Shit's getting crazy.
Oh my God. I was shocked that ball left the yard last night.
I was just like, wait, what happened? It was that was a foul ball the other way. And I was like, wait, what?
And we watch every game. I can count on, I think, and they tweeted it was his third career opposite field homer, but you never see it. He doesn't even hit fly balls to left field. He pulls everything in the air. It was shocking.
Yeah, it was. I mean, once Tyler Wade goes oppo taco, you shut down the league.
then we know we need a new ball for sure. And I think Phil Hughes tweeted out something along the lines of, you know, Gardy's my boy, but there's something wrong with that ball if he's going oppo. And all and Kutch was making a face, and the guys in the Yankee dugout were like kind of looking at each other, like everybody on that field was kind of shocked.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, we're sticking the bat out there, and it's just go, you know, like what happened here? You know, it's what you imagine a corked bat is like. Like I know Gardner doesn't have a corked bat, but growing up when you would hear about corked bats, it's like, oh, well, there's little rubber balls, so they just fly, you know?
Exactly. And speaking of last night, the Phillies broadcast, I mean, the camera angles, the commentary, everything about it was horrible.
If you did not – like, you can't just be a Phillies fan and watch the Phillies broadcast. Like, you have to – have grown up in Philly and know everything about Philly prep schools to watch that broadcast. It was atrocious. It was so bad. They did 5 minutes on David Boreanaz and his high school football career with no facts.
No, it's brutal, man. And the camera work, too. Like, there were multiple plays where they would throw a pitch and the camera just wouldn't be on the field. And I'm like, where's the ball? Like, it was very basic elementary stuff that the camera guy just couldn't figure out.
And they pointed out a billion times that they were in Philadelphia. Like, we're here at Citizens Bank Park. We're here at Citizens Bank Park. Now, I watch the YES Network broadcast. They tell me Paul O'Neill's in his basement. That's fun.
Yes.
That's a fun, silly goose time because it's between innings. He's like, I went upstairs and got a Gatorade. Oh, the because he gets like the Indians broadcast.
He's getting leftover pizza.
He's getting all that stuff that's fun. But these guys are just like, yep, we're here at Citizens Bank Park. So bad.
Brutal. And we don't have a choice because MLB TV is blacked out for us because we're here. So this is the only game in town. And yeah, it was brutal. And of course, I think it was Chad Green spiked a 53-foot fastball that Gary had no chance of blocking. It skips to the back. And the Phillies, you know, color guy goes on a rant about how Gary's lazy and this. And I'm like, this is just the most typical, like, guy that doesn't know what he's talking about. But I thought it was pretty brutal. But good to beat him. Kind of expected what we saw. Cole to hold him down. Couple home runs. I mean, it was pretty typical about what I expected last night.
I mean, going back to the Red Sox series, they are fucking bad.
Yeah.
You know who I was thinking about was like, now he's not a superstar, but Kevin Pillar, right? Kevin Pillar is on that team. And we've seen Kevin Pillar in Tampa, in Toronto. Like, we've seen him over time, you know, again and again. He went out to the Giants. Now he's on a one-year deal with the Red Sox. And I was just saying, like, for a guy who's an established major leaguer who went through, like, years in Toronto where there was the – you know, they stunk for a while. There's the excitement of, you know, when you've got Joey Bats. You end up in San Francisco at, you know, during not a very good season. And now you get signed with the Red Sox. And we could say whatever we want is, like, Yankee fans about hating the Red Sox. But, you know, the Red Sox are a historically great franchise. If you get to play for the Red Sox, if you're a baseball fan that didn't grow up a Yankee fan, you're like, this is really cool. I think the same thing, as long as you didn't grow up in Boston, you get to play for the Yankees. That's like, it's awesome. Being there for like just one of the, like, this is a joke. You've got no one. There are no superstars there. There's nothing, like, this is the worst time. And I think the next couple of years are going to be like the worst time to be a Red Sox. And that stinks for like a veteran who gets that chance.
Oh, and you notice it too. Like, think about the 2018 Red Sox, and the face obviously was Mookie Betts, who had an MVP season and pretty much played perfect baseball. And then a guy like Pilar, he's kind of the face of the 2020 Red Sox. You know, they're okay, whatever, professional ball player, but nobody that's going to do anything crazy. And these pitchers, like, I follow baseball as much as anybody I know. I've never heard of these guys.
No idea who's on the mound.
Like, who are they? Austin Bryce was the guy on Sunday. Is that, like, that can't be real.
It's like a name that they'd make up for like 90210. You know, I was trying to, because there are times, obviously, you know, as I think about, you know, covering the Yankees for, you know, the last however long I've done this, yeah, there's times when you know a little less because, you know, life happens, you know.
Yes.
When you got a wedding coming, you got a baby coming, and now you got, you know, COVID and everything going on. It's like, and I started looking, I was like, I don't know. Am I just, for a second, I was like, has this passed me by? Can I not do this anymore? Yeah. And I looked, I was like, let me actually like open up their roster and see like who is on this team. And I was like, no, it's not me. It's them. Like, who the fuck, like, who the hell are these people? Like, I know who like Christian Vasquez is. He's not good. I know Mike Chavis. I know Xander Bogaerts. I know Rafael Devers, but he's not like a superstar yet. But for some of these guys, I'm just like, who the fuck is taking the mound for you with Chris Sale dead?
He is dead. It's such a waste, too, because Devers, Bogaerts, and Martinez are all elite hitters. Like, yeah. What's the point of paying these elite hitters and having them if you're just going to half-ass it on the pitching side? It's like you're really wasting those bats.
And I think you're going to end up with I think JD has another opt-out. Which, I don't know. I mean, maybe he stays because who knows, you know, what the free agent market would look like. But, yeah, for some of these guys, I'm just like, you know, if you really look at the names on the offensive side, you're like, all right, this could be a decent team if JD steps up and, like, is a superstar. If Bogaerts were to step up and, you know, be what he was supposed to be. And, like, he's been very good. And Devers comes into his own. Very good offense. But you might as well put a ball on the fucking tee.
Oh, really? Really on the pitching side? And Andrew Benintendi, for all the hype that he had coming up, has basically had the same numbers as Brett Gardner. He's like a good but not great player.
Andrew Benintendi's a haircut. That's all it is. You're paying for his
girls
haircut.
Like him. He's good nickname or whatever.
Benny Biceps.
He's not even that big. Doesn't even make sense.
Damn, let him know.
But yeah, and then you also have people, and I think Emily said something about this on Friday where she was like, you know, do you want the Red Sox to be good? Like, do you miss the rivalry? And I am like, no. Like, I want them to go 0-162. Like, I don't care. I don't want them, you know, for me. But some people kind of root for them to be kind of good so that we can have the big games. But for me, I'm fine if they never win another game again.
Like, I like when the rivalry's good because – they were good and we just got to being good. Like when we had our down years and we got back. But now that we're good, like, I don't know, fuck them.
Yes.
I believe. Right. So Nick came over to my house and we watched the game on Friday, which I forgot how fun it is to watch a game with you because you are a psychopath. Like you're sitting, you're standing, you're squatting. I'm like, we're up by a lot of runs here, Nick. Like we are up by 4 runs and you're like, we just gotta, you never know, which I love. And my wife asked, like, don't you want it to be good? And you were like, no, I want it to be bad. I was like, I don't give a shit if their plane crashes. Like, I don't care.
Yes. That was your line. And, yeah, we're on the 6th floor. So, you know, weeknights, every night at 7 o'clock, the people below me probably think something's going on because I'm constant. I just can't help the pacing and the standing. It's something I've never been able to. Like, people just sit on the couch for 3 hours without moving, watching a game. I can't do it. I have to move around.
No, I mean, I tried to explain to her. I was like, we have, like, at field house, they have like these picnic table, bench like tables, whatever. And Nick is just standing at the front to the side, so he's not blocking anyone's view.
Yeah, I got to like, be on the
needs,
end.
Need to be able to move. Yeah.
And I'm the same way at games where I always will pick out an aisle seat.
Yeah.
I'm a definite aisle seat guy, whether it's going to the bathroom, getting beers, or just doing that. Like, I just like the freedom of being able to whatever on the aisle. But no, that was fun, and you know, obviously appreciate the cooking. It was a good time. Very uneventful game, though, Friday. I mean, Judge homered, but it was never – I feel like nothing really happened in that game. Montgomery looked good.
No, I mean, and to be honest, like, that's kind of what I wanted out of that game. Because first Yankees-Red Sox game, it's like, let's get through this. Let's get up early. I mean, they scored first. We answer with two, tack on another, and, you know, we're up 3-1 most of the game. No real threats. Tack on too late in the game. We got to hang out, have some drinks, have some food, and then forget that we had to do the post-game video and I smoked too much.
Right.
Totally forgot that I had to do that.
That was a funny one. And I think I remember we were talking about this towards the end of the game right before that, and I was kind of like, is Montgomery going to be the number two starter here? No, if Paxton bombs out, if Hap bombs out, if Tanaka is like, there is a world, I think, where he's starting game two.
I mean, I think it depends, because I don't think Tanaka is going to, you know, the bottom's going to fall out of Tanaka.
Yeah.
But there might be a time. Tanaka is, and it is part of being one of those guys who, like, he didn't have his stuff, but he can battle. But where it comes down to, like, we need to hold him for a game three, you know, like, or we need to, if we're hosting the first two games, it's like, do we want to pitch Montgomery on the road? Or do we want to pitch Tanaka on the road? Or, you know, if you were to lose game two, do you want it to be Tanaka or Montgomery that's coming in to, you know, right that ship? Those are kind of decisions that they make where, you know, being a gritty guy gets you in that position, whereas being the ace, you know when the hell you're pitching.
Yeah, the nerds will look at the matchups of whoever we're playing and decide that. I didn't even think about that, but it seems like with Tanaka, he's got a high floor, but he also kind of has a low ceiling. Like, he kind of just, you know what you're going to get. He's going to keep you in the game. Some games he's going to have it, some he's not. But I think Montgomery has a much higher ceiling. Like, I think Montgomery's best this year could be better than Tanaka's best, if that makes sense.
I mean, that's
blasphemy. 95.
That's blasphemy to some people when you talk about, like, playoff Tanaka. But, yeah, no. Give me the young, live arm.
Yeah, and I love playoff Tanaka too, but me and you went up there for game four of the ALCS in a must-win game, and he bombed at home.
Oh, my God, that was bad.
And that was awful. So, yeah, it is what it is, but it's going to be interesting. Like you said, we don't really have a rotation yet. It's Cole and then figure it out.
And, like, sometimes it's Cole and then it's like, I don't know, it's Cole again, you know? Some of these things. Okay, have you ever seen in, like, travel ball, like Babe Ruth, you know, you have a guy who is your starter, you know, he's your ace, and you've got a doubleheader on, like, a weekend thing and goes out there and, you know, you have a big second inning and you're up 7 runs. Do you want to pitch game two instead? And you just, you know, you take him out. And with these 7-inning games, I know it's different at the major league level and it's different with these big contracts, you know, but I just think it'd be hilarious if we, you know, this, you know, for one of these doubleheaders, got up big early in the game one that he started, and he's like, no, I'll just come back in a couple hours. I'll go have a sandwich, and I'll be back.
It sounds ridiculous when you say it, but the Yankees are very innovative and open to trying new things with pitching in the bullpen, so you never know. Do you got breaking news there?
No.
Okay, cause sometimes that's happened.
No,
but
no.
Yeah, you know, they obviously won't do that this weekend, but, like, you know, if it was maybe the last weekend and there's a doubleheader and they're going for the one seed, I wouldn't rule anything out.
Yeah. I mean, we're, especially once everyone's, like, stretched out and loose, could be fun. I mean, I'm trying to have as much fun with what's going on as possible. And it's funny to look at what Cole's doing and everyone's still saying, like, he's not quite there yet. And it's like, oh, man, it's going to be so great when he's here. Because I feel nothing but comfort when he's on the mound. Even seeing him pitch out of the stretch is like, this is weird.
Like, just seeing his face is great. It
but
really,
like,
is.
Whenever I see him, like, in the stretch, I'm like, that's odd. Why aren't you in the full windup? Why, like, you got, oh, someone got on. That's cute.
Somebody got on? And he's way better. If you've noticed, he is money with runners on. Like, he goes to a different level, and he did that in game three of the ALCS. Matt, you were there. We kept getting runners on, and he would just bear the fuck down. And you've been seeing that. The only runs he really lets up are solo homers.
Yeah. If someone has the balls to get on base against him, like, he takes it as a personal insult and challenge.
He's pissed. And I know everybody is saying we haven't seen it yet, but the truth is we haven't. We haven't seen that 15 strikeout game. I mean, how many – I think he had at least, you know, 5 or 6, 12 strikeout games last year with Houston. And I really do think that's coming soon. I kind of thought with the Phillies having that 8-day layoff or whatever, I thought we were going to see it last night. But they actually put together a lot of good at-bats against him. Bruce did, and Harper did, and even Didi a couple of times. They battled, but they just couldn't get the big hit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the from the whatever the workouts they've been doing, and they have some veterans on that, you know, on that roster that, you know, can compartmentalize everything that's going on and, you know, lock in on what they have to do, especially if you find out, you know, I haven't played in a week, but the first thing I'm facing is Cole. Let me watch. I mean, that's a real shitty way to go back into things, but, you know, let me watch a little extra film and see what I can do.
So. Yeah, and it was encouraging to me that I'm sure you've noticed this over the years. It seems like whenever we have a big Sunday night win against Boston, like, that next Monday is a hangover day.
Yeah.
And it was really cool to not see that this time, at least for me.
I think, and, you know, we say hangover day in, like, the metaphorical sense of, you know, hey, a big game and stuff. I think there is a little bit of, now that, you know, these guys are playing games, doesn't matter the emotional high, the emotional low, whatever it is. Then they're going right home. There's no, let's just grab a quick bite. You know, they're not getting a midnight dinner and maybe having a drink or two. Like, they're doing nothing other than going home. So I'm not saying that these guys are normally physically hungover on Monday, but, like, there are no distractions. It's just doing this back and forth that I think helps prevent some of that.
And they seem more focused than any year I can remember. In the same way how you were talking about, you know, the Phillies and the Marlins kind of threw off our schedule. They had to go to Baltimore on a whim at the last second.
I mean, they came to Philly for 2 days and did nothing. They just sat here.
We could have hung out with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
they're focused.
From the beginning of this whole thing, it was, oh, we're all going to stay in Tampa for these 2 weeks. You know, when people were, you know, other teams, players were booking flights all over the place. They're, you know, this isn't a vacation. This is just delaying the inevitable of us winning a championship. So I like that. I think part of it is that we don't have too many really young guys on the team, because even, like, our younger players are kind of old. You know, it's Judge. He's an older guy now. Sanchez is an older guy now. Like, the Baby Bombers have grown up. We have Gleyber, who is locked in on everything he does. Like, this is all he wants to do.
Yes.
And then, like, the only other person would be, like, Tyler Wade, but who gives a shit what he does?
Right, right. And even he at this point is probably the one guy that's on Tinder or whatever. Like, even he's like, all right, guys, I can't fuck this up. You know what I mean?
Right. So, no, I mean, it's for a very difficult season, very difficult scenarios thrown at them, they've been a cohesive unit. And, you know, it's good to see, regardless of how, you know, COVID turns out and the league turns out and all of that, we have this core now. I think, like, Cole is a big part of that, and the way he approaches it, and even the way he talks to Gary. Like, I know, I'm waiting for Cole to just be like, Gary, get rid of the fucking translator. I know you speak English.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't need that. No. Let's just fucking do this. You use a translator with the media, use it around. Let's just fucking do this. But, you know, when Cole misses on a pitch, you see him in the dugout, like, being hard on himself, talking to Gary about what they have to do, and I think that becomes contagious.
Yeah, and it's important for Gary and Cole to get along. You don't want it to be a situation. I mean, I go back to Randy Johnson. He didn't want to throw to Posada. Burnett didn't want to throw to Posada, and we had the Molina brother back there, if you remember. You don't want to get into one of those situations with an ace. I think we're good there. It seems like they have a good relationship. But, yeah, man, the past couple of years in the playoffs, it was maybe Paxton will have it tonight. Maybe Tanaka will have it. Maybe CeCe will turn back the clock. Like, it is so great to not have to ask yourself those insecure questions the day of a game.
Yeah, he's going to show up ready to work. Let's do this, which is great. Yeah, I mean, overall, like, just going to Baltimore, taking care of business, having the Red Sox come to town, taking care of business, having the Phillies come in just for like for the one day mini sweep. And then I think the doubleheader is going to be like, we owe two games in Philly. Why not just play those as the visiting team? But I think we're wearing the pinstripes for one.
So, yeah. So it's Wednesday or tomorrow or today, if you're listening to this, 4 o'clock and then the next game. So they'll win. They'll wear the pinstripes at four as the home team. They'll go and change, put on the road grays, and then play at night. But I really hate the idea of playing seven inning games against a team with a trash bullpen. Like, the way we separate ourselves is by pounding that pen. And now you have a situation where they're going to start their two best pitchers on Wednesday, Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler. Those guys could go six or seven innings each, and we don't really get too many cracks at the pen. So I thought that was a big, big disadvantage for us. And I actually blogged that today that I was pissed.
How do you feel in general about, because since the last time we talked, they've gone to the doubleheader, the seven-inning games. I get it. You're trying to get through get through these games. But to me, it feels like it's a desperate move. And again, to take it back to, like, Babe Ruth League, that the you know when there's, like, a tournament and it's like, oh, well, it's raining, and they're just like, well, we're shifting the schedules and everything's topsy-turvy just so some Karen mom doesn't fucking yell at the guy organizing and start demanding refunds. That's what Rob Manfred's doing right now. He's just trying to not have to give any refunds and get to the playoffs.
Yeah, to me, this is over the line. I understand we have to be flexible with COVID, but you have to set limits. I mean, would the NBA have a basketball game with three quarters? Would the NFL have a football game with three quarters? It's not a real baseball game to me. It's not. And I know you have to be flexible, and I know the schedule can change, but this is ridiculous to me. And the idea of saving injury or saving pitchers, is two innings really going to have that big of an impact? If a guy gets hurt, they're going to get hurt.
With a 30-man roster too. Like, we're not short on arms.
Yeah, what's the point of the whole taxi squad thing, the 30-man roster? Like, I thought that was what that was for.
And I don't even know, like, do you get an extra guy for doubleheaders? Like, traditionally you were getting the 26th man in the past.
Yeah, I don't know if we get 31 or whatever.
Yeah, but like that's more of a system that I think works than just saying we're going to play 2 7-inning games. Like, you're trying to like beat the, like, a storm's coming and hey, we're going to beat this.
Yeah, and I look at everything just in the prism of what is a competitive advantage for the Yankees, and I just think this is a disadvantage.
Yeah.
Us.
Oh, yeah.
We have bullpen arms, and Philly doesn't, and we have the depth to grind through 18 innings in one day with relievers all through the day, whereas they can. And I think this really, I don't think we're going to get swept or anything. We'll win at least one of them, and might sweep the doubleheader regardless. But it doesn't help us, and losing a game at Yankee Stadium and going there doesn't help us. It just doesn't.
No, not at all. It's we built the bullpen. We built for there to be 9-inning games. There's a lot that can't be controlled. COVID can't be controlled. The situation around it where it's like, we built a team to win a 162-game season. We built an organization that can sustain these like big taxi squad depths. Like that happened to work out. There are teams that are probably out there that are probably built more to win a 60-game season. They weren't built to do that, but they can do that. We built a bullpen for a 9-inning game. Because that's what baseball has been for a billion years.
Yeah, so, you're right. And speaking of the pen, the Canely news kind of broke when we were together on Friday. Now that we've had a couple of days to kind of digest that, does it worry you at all in terms of our World Series chances this year? Do you think they'll just keep rolling? How do you feel about that?
Well, again, I mean, I don't think it's a World Series. It's a baseball championship or whatever it is this year.
Okay.
But I don't – it's a blow. It hurts because the guy – when we got him, he was, to most people, that was the Todd Frazier, David Robertson trade. That, and I wrote, like, this is not a throw-in. What seems like a throw-in is not a throw-in. This guy is under control and throws 100 miles an hour. So, now where's his career go? Who knows? He probably comes back throwing hard, but we could have used him right now, especially with – flexible scheduling, and if you need a guy to come in and just be lights out and throw hard for an inning, like, that's very hard to replace.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's his emotional energy. It seems like the guys really rally around him. He's great against lefties. He's great against righties. And I know we have this deep pen, but you saw last year in the playoffs how quickly they can burn out you really don't trust Ottavino, at least I don't, in a big playoff spot. So I just, you know, we have a quote-unquote deep bullpen, but when you have to get through nine innings in a playoff game, it's not as deep as you'd think, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
There aren't just Tommy Canely's lying around. Like, there aren't really guys lying around that we can just pick up. That's another. He's a top reliever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, can we even trade to replace him? Like, it's tough to do that in these, like, circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, without when you're not giving up the farm. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with him. It stinks because he's been, you know, he's been good for us. He brings that energy. There was a part of me that was like, well, you know, he won't be dicking around in the bullpen, maybe being distracting at times.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, it stinks to see any guy get hurt, especially if it's like, oh, you're going to miss the, you know, if this was going to happen, you know, let it happen months ago. Because now, you know, you're out a year and a half.
Yeah, you got to figure he's pretty much going to miss all of next year. And you got to wonder, are they going to give him one of those two-year Tommy John contracts where it's really cheap and it's like, we help you rehab the first year and then we get you cheap, you know, your second year coming back, and then you can test the market again. You see that a lot with these.
I mean, he's up for arbitration, and then it becomes one of those things where, what was he making this year, like $2.5 million?
Yeah, 3-4, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and so can you – yeah, can we talk him into, like, hey, we'll give you a two-year deal for $4 million. You make $2 million this year, $2 million the next year. We get a free agency year back from you. But, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have – if we were to, say, non-tender him, though, I think someone else would offer that. So hopefully we can piece something together for him.
Yeah, hopefully. And speaking of the bullpen – what the hell is Aroldis Chapman doing in Scranton? This guy was squatting 5,000 pounds at his apartment. You can't tell me that he is not ready to close tonight, tomorrow.
Why,
like, he does not need any ramp-up time.
Why was he just not pitching yet, like day one?
Like, he went to Scranton to throw a bullpen. You think Aroldis Chapman wants to hang out in Scranton with that Kevlar Jeep that he has?
I think it has to do with, like, it has to do with the amount of people you can have, like, with the team. Like, because technically he's no longer on the IL. So then in order to, like you can't – your roster's 30 guys, and I think you can have, like, a three-man taxi squad. So if someone gets hurt, they're traveling with you, but they're ready to go, minimizing travel. Like, I don't know. Chapman's not – you can't just have Chapman be a part of that, you know?
Yeah.
Or just, like, I don't know. Come throw your bullpen at noon and then go back to your apartment. Or, you know, what are we doing going to Scranton, Pennsylvania? Where does he stay in Scranton? He's got to just go back and forth. Like, now you're making a guy drive an hour and a half. You're making a guy drive an hour and a half to go play catch.
He might not be staying over there. You're right. And you can't tell me that he's not ready to close. I would be totally comfortable giving him the ball tonight in either of these doubleheader games. You're telling me he's not ready to go out there? The guy works out like a fiend 365 days a year. I refuse to believe that he needs any ramp-up period.
Remember Kei Igawa?
Yes.
So, I mean, I've talked about this before. I went to Kei Igawa's first start. I was so hyped for him. And he stunk. He stunk so bad. I was sitting in the bleachers of the old stadium. So my now wife and I left early. I was like, we can just head back to Philly. Left early. A-Rod won it on a walk-off grand slam. But
April of like 07. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we were down big, and I was just like, you know, we got college shit to go back and do. He spent like the rest of his time with the Yankees playing in AAA because he was on that contract. And he lived in New York and just took a car service from Manhattan to Scranton every day.
That's hysterical. Oh, because he had the money for it from the contract.
It's like, fuck, who's the guy with the Red Sox?
Oh, is it Tozawa?
No, they have a guy there. No, he's not Asian.
Rusney Castillo?
Yes.
Okay, the outfielder.
They've got him stashed in Pawtucket because they've been trying to get under the salary cap
for
years. And he's like, everyone says, like, for other teams, he'd be a major league player if he didn't make the salary that he does. So they're able to stash him there. And he lives in Boston, like two blocks from Fenway, and drives to Pawtucket every day.
It's not worth it at that number to have him up. That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, it's like,
It's a long drive. That sounds exhausting.
There's some, fuzzy math to it. But yeah, he had that like 7-year, billion-dollar contract with 7 years, like $72 million, and he played in the major leagues for. He hasn't played in the major leagues since 2016. We played nine games.
Yeah, and you brought up Kiagawa. That was one of Cashman's only like emotional decisions. Like the Red Sox signed Dice K that offseason, and the Yankees just were like, we need to do something to answer that. We'll get the other Japanese pitcher. And it turns out he absolutely just sucked. What did he win? One or two games? He was awful, man. He was so bad.
He had the sunglasses. He wore the Oakleys when he pitched. And it was a disaster. What did he do? He went 2-3 in 2003 and 2007. Yeah, that's when I was driving up to the Bronx. Like, we got this fucking Asian guy. It's gonna be sick.
And he was a lefty. It's like he's gonna be dominant. Oh my god.
Yeah. And then he went 0-1 in 2008. And then he was decent in Scranton, but he just could never get it done.
No, yeah, never. One of the rare, it was like the rebound girl. It was like Red Sox got Dice K. We got to come away with something.
Yeah, but from 2008, 9, 10, and 11, he went from New York to Scranton. And then he even played in Trenton some in 2011. And went.
That's just sad.
Yeah.
Played a double A.
16 games in Trenton. It's an easier commute.
You could take NJ Transit from Penn Station.
He had a car service. I remember I read an article about it. He had a car service that every day picked him up, got in the car, drove there, whether he was pitching or not. You know, but it's not your time in the rotation. You still got to be there. So he just went back and forth every day.
A lot of commuting. But, I mean, if you have the money and you want to live in Manhattan, he obviously didn't care about getting to know his teammates or hanging out after the games, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, that just became a, like... well, if there's a real emergency and we got to go to Kayagawa. I mean, there's a... I don't know. I Googled best hotel Scranton, Pennsylvania, and the highest price that I'm seeing is $134. So...
Yeah, even with COVID, I would think it would be low. I'd think it'd be lower, even.
I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Who's looking at vacation and...
there's a Radisson there that maybe Chapman's staying at. I don't know. Like, I just assumed Chapman had, like, a mattress up against the wall wherever he lives, and he was just throwing at that.
Yeah, me too. He's been working out, and obviously we saw the pictures of him over the off season where he just looked like the Hulk ripping heaters, playing poker.
I mean, they were like, oh, this guy's got the most deadly disease that we've seen in a long time, and then a day later it was like, here's him overlooking Central Park, squatting a billion pounds like he's fucking Iron Man.
No, he's ridiculous. I mean, to be able to maintain the velocity that he has for 10 years, nobody else has ever really done that. Throw over 100 for 10 years straight. It really is remarkable, and it makes sense with his work ethic.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised that when they said, hey, he wasn't, he's got a ramp up or whatever, I was like, all right. I mean, has anyone told him that? But when I saw he was going to Scranton, I was just like... I'd be surprised if he comes back, if he doesn't just keep driving. Unless he was just like, all right, Scranton, but I'm driving myself. What's the fastest anyone's ever done it?
Oh, yeah, he's definitely doing 120.
Yeah.
Just trying to top his velocity on
What's the fastest anyone's ever done it, I'm surprised that hasn't been a – I think if I would – well, I guess they don't really have cars much if you're like a taxi squad guy. Like, in general, the guys who ride the Scranton shuttle every year – if they were just like, all right, I did it in 47 minutes, like some kind
just
of competition.
Making bets out of it.
Like long reliever contest.
Yeah. And right now I think that obviously everybody's talking about Judge. He's the main story. Homered in five homers in a row in a game. But Gio Urshela is playing some of the best baseball I've ever seen. Defensively, he's making every play. Offensively, he's hitting 3-run homers, grand slams. The guy has been absolutely dominant. I feel like we got to talk about him a little.
I mean, there were a good amount of people who were like, listen, Gio Urshela was great last year. A lot of fun, played well, found a way to, hit 314, No one even knew who he was. He's going to play in 100, you know, plays in 130 games, play some elite defense. This is going to be great. You know, that's cute, but we got Miguel and Duhar coming back. He should have been the rookie of the year. He was working at his defense before he got hurt. I mean, Urshela has put that all to rest.
There's no question. There's no question anymore. I mean, just think about the feeling you have when a ground ball is hit to Andujar compared to when it's hit to Gio. It's I can't even describe it.
I mean, if a ground ball is hit right at Andujar versus if a ground ball is just hit anywhere between third base and second base, I feel better with, you know, I feel better with Gio Urshela there because the mobility, the arm strength, just knowing what he's doing, he doesn't have that double pump that we see out of Andujar. It's, you know, I think it's night and day.
There were at least three slow rollers last night. Those hard slow rollers, they're like the hardest play for a third baseman to make. The Gio made beautiful plays on, and I remember thinking there is no way Andujar would have made any of these plays. And it really does change the game. And think about how pissed off a pitcher like Cole would be. Like, you cannot have Andujar third base for any of Cole's starts.
Oh, I mean, I like to think, because I think Gerrit Cole's like the perfect person right now and leader, that, you know, he'd treat it maturely. But yeah, no, he probably wouldn't. And the good thing is, like, we've got Urshela, and, you know, he's 28, bit of a journeyman. He had, you know, cup of coffee with Toronto, cup of coffee with Cleveland. We still have him. He's going into arbitration.
We'll never have to pay him real money. I mean, by the time he's a free agent, he'll be 31, 32. Maybe they give him a, you know, nice 3-year deal or something. But no, he'll never cost a big contract.
Yeah, he's gonna, you know, he'll come. He'll, you know, make his way up to, you know, making $4 million and five and seven. You know, maybe get to eight by 2023. But as long as he keeps doing this, like, it's gonna be great. He could be the cornerstone of a great infield. You know, when you think about, obviously, we've got to get to work on the DJ contract. But you get DJ, Gleyber, Gio. I don't care who you put at first base.
Yeah, you know, right. Doesn't matter. And I can't mentally, we talked about how I pace and jump around during games. Mentally, I can't go back to holding my breath on a ground ball hit to Andujar. I can't do it. I've gotten so used to just that comfort and that smoothness that Gio has, and I can't go back.
Yeah. No, it's it's, yeah, you don't worry about anything on the ground. Like, there's nothing on the ground. I mean, traditionally, it's been, you know, our whole defense. You know, Judge is, you know, a great defender, especially if he stays healthy. Hicks has been great. Hicks let that ball the other day go. But, like, I feel like he owned that right away. And, I mean, say whatever you want about Brett Gardner not being able to hit anything to start this season. He's always been an elite defender.
Always, and Talkman's a great defender too when he plays. They're loaded with defensive talent. DJ's the best defensive second baseman in the league. I mean, they're loaded. Yeah. They're loaded defensively.
So, no, I mean, if this season does not finish, we have a lot to be excited about, because our weakest spots right now are Hap, Paxton, you know, Tanaka's always questionable, and they're all gone after this year.
You're exactly right. And with Hap, you got to think they're going to make sure he doesn't hit that innings. Because I know all that those vesting options were adjusted
for
the 60-game season. They are going to – I mean, if he has one inning to go, they'll put him on the IL or something. Like, Cashman will make sure that that doesn't vest.
I just don't think with the way the game is being structured too – I mean, we're going to the bullpen earlier because they're using the excuse of, you know, with everything going on, we're not really – unless you are an ace – you know, I don't see unless Hap has no hits through six innings, like, I don't think we're going to really we're not going to see him in a seventh inning.
No, I'll be happy with four innings and one or two runs at this point. It really feels like his Yankee career ended during game one of that ALDS in Boston. What's your phrase? Piss down his leg.
Piss down his leg when he sees the Empire State Building. You don't re-sign that guy.
Yeah, I mean, Hap got lit up in Fenway. Like, he looked like a lost little kid that wandered into the wrong neighborhood. We got shelled. We lost that series. And after that, everybody else wanted to re-sign him because he had a good second half. But after that start, I was like, I don't really trust this guy. Moving forward, Cashman decided to re-sign him. I've written many times about how much I disagreed. It is what it is.
I think it was a desperation move. It was like, oh, well, he's lefty. You know, it's tough.
He's a veteran. And all the word, like, he's a professional. He's a veteran. He does things the right way. It's all that intangible bullshit that doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't keep the ball on the ground.
Yeah, and doesn't have his stump, but he battles.
He battles. He's not even a battler. Tanaka's a battler. He's out there battling.
And Paxton's a battler. And it looks like with Paxton, he's pretty much writing his ticket out of town. I mean, I don't see any way Cashman pays him if he's sitting at 91.
Well, I think you're going to end up with Scott Boras has an excuse for that. He's got a binder full of information on that.
He does.
And he's going to, like, Paxton could legitimately be like a Didi situation where it's like, we just don't call. Like, there was just no phone call, not even a like, hey, so what are you looking for? Because the number is going to be insulting. Like, Boras is going to ignore this season, the first half of last season, and just say, like, this guy, he's a $25 million a year pitcher.
He'll pull up. He'll only talk about that start against the Astros in game five that we were both at, where he had the 10 strikeouts. Yeah, that'll be it. And it kind of makes the decision easy, because all along we've all kind of felt like they're not going to pay Tanaka and Paxton. Like, one of those guys is gone, and you see the way that Tanaka's come back from that concussion and how much of a gamer he is, and you just see Paxton with the sad puppy dog look, like, trudging off the mound. To me, just based on their mental makeup and their personalities, like, that makes it an easy decision for me.
And I haven't heard, you know, and obviously, you know, we're not in the clubhouse, but I don't know, you hear about the personality of Tanaka a little bit. You know, and obviously there's a language barrier for a long time and social things. You hear about Cole coming right in, setting up dinners. You heard that about CeCe back in the day. You even heard about that with AJ Burnett. Yeah. Paxton, it's just like, if he's just not there, oh, well, he wasn't there, you know? Like, all right, he's not here anymore. There's not that. You either have to be fucking amazing or very good. And like a leader and, you know, all this stuff to get the money that we're talking about here. And he's not going to, you know, that's just not him. And when you look at it from like a value standpoint, Tanaka's making $23 million a year. I mean, obviously everything's down a little bit this year. He's making $23 million a year. The guy's made $155 million-ish, you know, in America, aside from, and, you know, that's just on the field. The guy can take a 50% pay cut, make $12 million a year, and, you know, get to stay in New York, continue to be a Yankee, continue, try to win a World Series for the Yankees, still get all that advertising money back in Japan, and, you know, he could do a four-year, $48 million contract, make 12 a year for the next 3 years, of next 4 years, be 35, see where he's at, maybe go back to Japan for a year or two.
That's exactly what I was thinking. 50 million or something over 3 or 4 years. Exactly. You know, you don't want to insult the guy, but he knows he's not a $25 million a year pitcher anymore. Like, I think they'll have an understanding there. And he seems very comfortable as a Yankee for this entire 7 years. Like, he's never seemed uncomfortable with anything. He's adapted well. And then Paxton kind of reminds you of the guy. Every friend group, I feel like, has the guy where it's like, you don't realize he's not there until like 2 hours in. It's like, oh, he's not here. Like, he's just not memorable, no personality. That's who Paxton is.
And if you think about, like, Tanaka came in the end of Jeter. You know, we've got Ellsbury. Like, this was a big, you know, team coming out to win a World Series. And he's gone through some rough years, gone through some surprising years, and been a professional about the whole thing. Like, you've never heard a complaint. You've never really heard, you know, anything. So I could see him coming up, because, like, where else are you going to go? Unless there's, like, some weird thing where it's like, oh, him and Otani want to, you know, be boys, which I don't see happening. Like, you're going to relocate your family? I don't think so.
And how much more money do the Dodgers have? They just gave Mookie $400 million. They're not going to be lining up to spend money this offseason after that. And like you said, I don't ever think about with, like, prime free agents, other than the Dodgers, I don't think we really have competition in terms of culture, location, stadium, like everything that goes into it. The Dodgers are really the only team. Like, I wasn't worried about the Angels with Cole. I was just worried about the Dodgers.
Yeah, and like, if someone wants to pay, you know, $17, $18 million a year to Tanaka after this season, go nuts. I don't want it to be the Yankees. You know, If the Dodgers want to pay that and they win a World Series, good for them. I don't think $18 million a year Tanaka is the difference between winning a World Series or not.
No, me neither. And we have the depth. I mean, we talked about the Clark Schmidts, the Davey Garcias of the world. I mean, we have guys ready to step in. I mean, even Mike King looked pretty good the other night. So the Yankees are comfortable with their depth. Who knows with Herman? No, I still have him in the back of my mind as maybe late this year or next year as a potential contributor still.
Well,
so
I think Herman can't come back this year. I think
he can in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be a weird move.
It would be weird, but if one of the pitchers goes down, I wouldn't be shocked, man. He won 18 games last year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if they can find, I don't know how it works too. Sometimes when you're coming off suspensions like that, it's like, you know, a month before you can start doing stuff, like not with the team, you start rehabbing. So who knows? I mean, maybe they do. I mean, if I'm the Yankees, I'm telling him regardless, like wherever he is, like, yeah, get down to Tampa and start working out. You know, like if we've got our eyes on you every day, we know you're not hitting any women.
Right. I mean, he's obviously got his personal problems. And look, I don't think it's an over 50% chance that he pitches in a playoff game, but I definitely think that percentage chance is higher than 10. Like, I think it's possible depending on injuries. And look, we got a doubleheader Wednesday. We got a game Thursday. How do you see the rest of this Philly series shaking out? 3 out of 4?
Well, wait, we have the doubleheader Wednesday. Oh, and then we're staying there on Thursday.
We're playing Thursday again, yes.
See, I've tweeted, like, if I know on any given day who the Yankees are playing, where they're playing, and what time they're playing, like, that's a big win for me.
Yeah, it I can has never been nuts, tell. Man. And they're not playing, and, you know, we thought we were going to have a game tonight, and it's obviously not happening.
Yeah, and it's weird also because, obviously, we're in Philly, and, you know, it'd be like, oh, the Yankees are here. It's weird to not be excited about that. Okay, yeah, so we're doing that, and then we're doing 4 games over the weekend.
Gotcha. So yeah, 2 doubleheaders this week, Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, which is tough.
A lot of innings.
But I guess that's their excuse of, like, this is why we're doing 7 innings. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we took, like, 2 of these 3. If we took 3 of them, I wouldn't be surprised. But I don't see us losing more than 1 of these games, and it could possibly be 1 in a doubleheader.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think we're going to split the doubleheader one way or another. And then Thursday is supposed to be Tanaka and Zach Eflin, who's not a very good starting pitcher for the Phillies. So, I mean, Tanaka was throwing 94 on Saturday. So that's something to keep an eye out on.
Tanaka too knows his contract's up.
Yeah. Yeah. A little extra juice. Is that where the juice comes from?
Maybe. I mean, you get. Yeah, I see us taking, you know, 2 out of these 3 and then 3 out of 4 in Tampa.
They've looked awful, the Rays. They got swept by the Orioles.
I could even see us taking, like, the first 3 and then that Sunday, like, 1 o'clock.
Mail it in.
We're getting out of Florida. We have an off day tomorrow. You know, I could see that happening.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. You do see them mail in that last game. I think last year was right before the All-Star break. They played Tampa on a Sunday, and they literally slept walk through the whole game. You see that a lot.
I mean, it's one of those things where you're just like, especially with everything going on, it's like, how the fuck do I get out of Florida? And it's funny, too, with, like, the fact that they're not playing today, but they're playing the doubleheader. Last night, I mean, a lot of people were all saying, like, Major League Baseball got it right for the first time. They're like, we see that there's going to be an issue tomorrow. Let's just get ahead of it and push the game. And now it's sunny out.
Like, it's killing me, man. It's like perfect baseball weather right now.
It's beautiful out. I walk the dogs. Like, yeah. But I get it because also with, like, the travel, like, now they were able to get the Phillies on the bus, get them back to Philly, get them in their apartments, get the Yankees on a bus tomorrow morning or whatever it is.
Yeah, Citizens Bank Park's also, you know, obviously it sucks that we can't play at Yankee Stadium, but Citizens Bank Park might be one of the only parks that's actually more hitter-friendly than Yankee Stadium. Being that we live here, I mean, I've been to a bunch of games there. The ball absolutely flies, short dimensions, so we shouldn't have any problem hitting there.
Yeah, no, this is a band box. Besides that, like, around the league, I mean, you know, the Mets are a disaster. You know, with Cespedes. The Cespedes, $110 million for 127 games over 4 years is insane. But, like, classic Mets.
almost a million a game. You got.
Yeah, it's wild. It like, I know he restructured like the last year and everything, but to just not show up, like, I think, you know, everyone said when he didn't show up and people were making jokes, like, you can't make jokes, like, he might be dead. I think now, because of what it was, like, the next time he'll probably be dead, but we're allowed to make jokes.
Yeah, everybody was being, like, such a hard over that. Like, I feel like everybody is just so pent up with, like, how could you speculate? Like, come on, guys. He mailed it in. He went home. It was very unlikely that I thought that something that happened to him in Atlanta. And the people that are like, you can't ever say anything. It's like, all right, guys, take a deep breath. He's on a jet going home,
yeah,
drinking some sort of liquor.
Yeah, well, he went to the mall. Someone got a picture with him that day at a mall. He was just walking around a mall with a mask on. Which it's like, oh, you're opting out with COVID, but you went to the mall and took a picture with these teenagers?
Bizarre. Do you think they just started slow and he was like, fuck it? Or do you think,
yeah,
it was actually,
yeah,
COVID,
I think,
related?
He's just, okay, like, yeah, like, fuck it. Why am I dealing with this? You know?
And that's another advantage I think the Yankees have. And think about some of the teams we're playing in September. I don't know. Think of some random player. If the team is out of it, what's the point? And now all of a sudden we're playing weakened teams. I mean, that's a scenario that could lead us to going like 50-10.
Yeah. Yeah, I started yesterday actually thinking about 50-10. Like, this, it's
right,
a cakewalk. Because our team, we're just so locked in. Lorenzo Cain opted out. The Cardinals are going through. It looks like the Cardinals are missing a week of baseball. We'll let them worry about how they're going to make up those schedules. Like, at first when it was the Marlins, because it, like, touched us, I was like, what the fuck, baseball's But now that it's in the Central, I'm like, oh, they'll figure it out. We'll see in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah, Central and the West, it really doesn't matter for us.
Yeah, it seems like they have a lot of guys or rumors of going to a casino. It seems like the league has now said, like, essentially, you can't leave your hotel. Like, we're not in a bubble, but you can't leave your hotel. And if you can't follow those rules, just opt out. And a couple guys have opted out, which is their, you know, it's their right to do that. Joey Votto, very Canadian move to just be like, I felt some symptoms. Don't, you know, test me. Came back negative, but I felt symptoms. I feel like a lot of guys play through that. I mean, that's how we ended up essentially with the Miami situation.
Right. Like the opposite of what we're seeing. It's better for guys to be cautious. But then you have like Yadi Molina. He was asymptomatic and he tested positive. I mean, obviously that was a Cardinals situation, but there were pictures of, I think it was like two Cardinals relievers were out renting a boat or going on a boat ride or a picture of them doing something in public.
I think it's, you know, it's Jeter said it too. Like, people just got, you know, the false sense of security. And there's a bit of like, well, hey, I would do stuff. You know, what's the point of being rich and famous if I can't be rich and famous? You know, if I'm just going to work. But I think with these, my hope is with these first two scares that we are able to just say, we're staying in. Everyone just, we're staying in, and that's it.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I mean, Jeter, what a PR nightmare his Marlins tenure has. Like, for all the good PR he had during his playing days, like, my God, it's been a nightmare.
I think it's all kind of bullshit because, like, he got rid of all those players because, like, listen, you move into a house, you don't keep all the furniture and pay. Like, I almost bought a house and then I didn't because they were like, oh, and we got the solar panels on the roof aren't paid off, so it's an extra $37,000 loan. And it's like, well, I didn't sign up for that. I don't have the time to do the research. You know, I'm gonna pass. So, like, he's trying to build something from the ground up. And I don't necessarily blame him. Like, he's not in the strip club with them or whatever it is. But you do have to go all the way to the top and take that responsibility. And I feel like he's come forward and done that. And hopefully they use it as a learning lesson as they try to build this franchise over the next decade.
You're right, and this sounds kind of fucked up when I say it, but if it was going to happen to any team, I'd rather it happen to an irrelevant young team that's not in the American League. Like, I think it would be a bigger deal baseball-wise if this had happened to the Dodgers or the Cubs,
yeah,
or the Red Sox. I think part of the fact that we were able to sweep it under the rug is because it was the Marlins.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I think that's baseball. The Yankees...
We're good.
We're good. We're good at baseball. We're good at baseball. I'm excited to watch baseball. Like, you know, I look forward to it, which is nice. Something
great,
to look
man.
Forward to.
It is. That's what life's all about. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, keep rolling with Philly and take care of Tampa, and then we'll be talking again next week.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, you can follow Nick on Twitter.
At NKirbyNYY.
It's a good follow. Give him a follow. You follow me at JJ from the Bronx. Follow the show at George's Box Pod. Rate, review, 5 stars, all that fun stuff. And, yeah, just go ahead and tell a friend, because now it's baseball season. We have actual baseball to talk about. And we don't know where the season's going. We don't know when it's going to finish. But if there's a championship, we'll see you at the parade. Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally back, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champ Big Shot Bob Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like to play without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember, use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. So go check them out. BLUEWIRE, betonline.ag. You're betting anyway. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock resets after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item's yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use promo code George. That's DealDash.fm/George.